DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands, or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app, and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
Best food scenes in the country, right here in Minnesota. And nobody knows it like magazine food critic and James Beard Award finalist Jason DeRusha. Now bringing you the most interesting people and hottest trends. Let's listen in as DeRusha eats.
His life could be a movie or a book, a rough and tumble childhood, a successful career as a chef and a business owner. And now he has dreams of taking his pizza restaurant. Oh, limitless opportunity. Joshua Hedquist is our guest on DeRusha Eats. Joshua, it's good to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me. That was quite the intro. I wasn't expecting that. You're such a pro, I forgot.
It's that I can't take the journalist or the storyteller out of you, right? Yeah, now that we're doing this.
Yeah.
When your business right now, OG Zaza,
yep.
It is New Haven style pizza.
Mm-hmm.
In this conversation, I want to get into how you chose New Haven style,
mm-hmm.
how you're navigating today's reality of running a restaurant with social media and with critics and your outsized personality. But I think people would be interested to know your personal story, because mm-hmm. I think the fire in you, well, you tell me, does the fire in you date back to sort of the challenges you had as a child?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so where do I start? You want me to start on the fire? You want me to start on the pizza?
Let's start on the fire, right?
The fire. Yeah, you need the fire before the pizza anyway.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I think having a rough childhood definitely gave me grit. You know, I think, and a lot of success stories come from people with tough beginnings. You have to develop a survival mechanism to be successful and handle adversity. So
I think, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Minneapolis over on the south side as a child, moved around a lot, ended up on like in the West Metro area. By the time I was 16, I was in court looking at 3 felonies, got sentenced 13 months. Did hard time as a minor in an outstate penitentiary in Illinois, Springfield, Illinois.
What'd you do?
Stole a car, wrote some bad checks, got caught with some weed.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't like this hardened, violent criminal, but I definitely made some mistakes. I lacked guidance. I lacked mentorship. You know, and I think that that fight in me didn't want to go with the flow. I always wanted to go against the flow. I don't know. It was a natural instinct. But through all those hard times, it kind of made me who I am today. And I'm really lucky because I have a unique perspective of I have a small bit of success in my life right now. But I've had, you know, I've fought over the crumbs with cockroaches. And, you know, I've seen both sides of that. And it's what really drives me into trying to help others out, talking about my battle with alcoholism and addiction and incarceration and poverty, because I want to inspire others and let them know, like, your life was tough. It might be a superpower.
I mean, you were you were on a path that you could have stayed on, that destructive path, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, yep. when you're serving hard time, like, it's not like you're necessarily seeing inspiration of like, oh, I can go own my own business someday.
No.
That's not what you're getting in Springfield, Illinois, in the federal penitentiary.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You're not looking at that at all.
So when you got out, mm-hmm. what did you do to kind of
started cooking.
It was cooking.
It was the only job I could get at a young age. You know, I was cooking.
How old were you when you got out?
17.
Yeah.
So
you're 17, you're a high school dropout.
Oh, yeah. I mean, last grade I completed was ninth grade. So I was getting in trouble before that. I started cooking, though, when I was like 14 or 15. When I got out, I got a job at Sunsets.
Oh, yeah.
In Wayzata.
I remember
Sunsets. And my nickname was Snoop Doggy Dishwasher because I was a little different from the other guys in
right.
there. But that was cool. I liked
it. Well, and Wayzata, for people who might be listening all around the country, is this very upscale.
Yeah.
And Sunsets was right on this beautiful mm-hmm. Lake Minnetonka. Mm-hmm. But it was sort of like a locally owned Applebee's type.
Yeah.
A little something for everyone.
It was a total local hangout joint, but I really got to cut my teeth in there. It was the first time I heard good job. My whole life, it was never a good job, right? Huh. I got in trouble. I was on the short bus. I had IEPs, individual education, you know, programs because of learning disabilities I got diagnosed with. Never heard good job. Just heard about what I was as a problem. And that, like, hooked me. And I was like, good job? And, like, what made me crazy in life made me good in cooking. I could juggle multiple things. I have tons of energy. I like to work. Give me a shovel and I can dig straight to New Zealand. You know, I don't stop moving. And so in a classroom setting, that was a terrible set of circumstances for
right,
me.
Right.
But in a kitchen, they're like, wow. So next thing you know, I was washing dishes, prepping, working the line. And before I knew it, I was like the head grill cook at the original Redstone with Scott Foster.
Wow.
Which is like still my buddy today. I call him to ask him for advice. And he's a great mentor. And you know, Scott Foster.
Yeah.
And but like, you know, that was kind of. I skipped over some stuff, but like at that moment in my life, I was working at this really cool restaurant, which was probably the hottest restaurant in the West.
Redstone?
Yeah, the original one in Minnetonka.
Yes. I mean, that was like all of the athletes were hanging there. That was like the spot.
We were cooking good food, and it was a cool atmosphere, and I was hooked. I was like, I love this. You know,
What was it? Was it the action? Was it the people?
I think it was the camaraderie. I didn't grow up with a dad, so I kind of lacked that male role model in my life. And you know, chefs became that for me as a line cook, and I didn't have any brothers and sisters, and sometimes this wasn't always a good thing, but the people I worked with became my family. I should have probably set better boundaries as a youngster because I would get drunk and maybe say something stupid, but they became my family. And so for me, it really was like a part of my life. People are like, did you choose restaurants? I'm like, I think restaurants kind of chose me because of all my defaults or just negatives that I had in my life, you know, not having family, not having a dad. I walked in there, I was like, what a great fit.
Huh. Could you tell right away? You're like, I'm hooked.
Yeah. Because people told me I was good. I remember one
Isn't that interesting? Just the encouragement was the difference maker for you.
And I don't even think it was an encouragement statement. They're like, good job. You know, how many times do you say that to people? I just never heard it because I was so busy fucking around.
Right. Right.
And then you meet impressive people like a Scott Foster, and he's like, you're the next young stud. And I was like, whoa, you know, like that was the coolest thing to hear from a guy like that.
Did you cook for fun for yourself outside of the restaurant, or was it mostly just in, you know, then these mentors sort of taught you to cook?
Yeah. So I think earlier on in my life, for the most part, most restaurants didn't take cooking as serious as it does today.
Yeah.
We weren't buying Japanese knives for $300 and, you know, buying $5,000 worth of cookbooks or doing stages in L.A. at a Michelin star restaurant. So back then it was more like you mimic things that you saw. I did cook, but I wasn't a great cook.
Yeah.
I think that happened later on in my life. I think I learned systems. I learned how to find my position and get really good at it. Like, I was the grill guy on a Saturday night at Redstone. That was the hardest station, and there was, like, an ego or bravado to it. Like, that's the grill guy for Saturday night. And that was more what I leaned in towards.
Because you could do volume.
Yeah.
You could keep up with a super busy restaurant.
We had a kid call out once because that station was, like, a two-person station was huge, and the volume they were doing there was like, you know, 12 grand for lunch, and this is 1999, you know what I'm saying? That's a lot of money, and one guy called in sick, and it's usually a two-man station. I looked at the guy wearing on the wheel. I said, I got it, and I did, and I owned that shit, and I was like, I was the man after that. That felt so good.
That's cool. Yeah. Josh Hedquist is the owner of OG Zaza, sharing his kind of story from the beginning. And when you had that moment, it was a different time in food. The fact that you said, like, it wasn't, you weren't, like, chasing the stuff. You were more, you know, sort of the social media ideals, the food TV ideals. Like, that wasn't really the thing.
No one even knew about James Beard Award.
Right.
You know, like, no one was going for that. Maybe, I don't even think Tim McKee had won it yet, you know, so it wasn't even a Minnesota thing.
It was really about, like, you were, at that time, this was the restaurant the celebrities were going to, the athletes were going to, and you were...
I was a part of that, and I got to control, or not control, I got to work the busiest station with the most, you know, bravado.
Yeah.
That was badass.
At that point, when you were doing that, were you like, well, I'm never going back to kind of what I was?
Yeah. I think, for the most part, yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. I think I was hooked on that for a while. I did probably get into involved in some other things for a little while.
I mean, restaurants also are a home of booze and drugs and sex. Like, so when you're thinking about, like, all right, I'm turning away from. We don't have to make it as clean as, like, well, now I'm done with, like, the types of things that got me in trouble.
I wasn't...
Restaurants have all of those temptations around, too.
I wasn't stealing cars anymore, but there was definitely... I learned what Rumplements were at the age of 20.
Right. Yeah.
Shout out Miguel Santana. He was a sous chef at Redstone. He's like, you know what Rumpies is? And I'm like, no.
No.
But yeah. Someone taught me and taught me well. And yeah, it was sex, drugs, and rock and roll back then. It was a lot different. The culture was completely different than it is today. And you had to figure that stuff out. So maybe I traded in stealing cars to, you know, a different type of lifestyle of running and gunning, probably drinking and partying way too much, making terrible decisions.
Yeah.
And not, you know, the tough part was not having the mentorship through that. I think that when you're going through life, it's really good to have people to rely on that you can trust. So when you're having a bad day, or like when you need to figure some pivotal things out, or maybe you're kind of going off the deep end,
right?
You need someone there to maybe be like, "Hey, let's talk about this, pull back on the reins." But I didn't have that, so it was all gas pedal for like, you know, 10 or 15 years. You know, I went hard.
When did you sort of make the turn to like really refining your craft as a cook and as a chef?
Great question. I got a job working for this dude named Philip Dorwart.
Oh, yeah.
Triggs.
I know Philip, yeah.
And it was such a unique experience of how we opened that restaurant, where he was like, hey, I want to do fried calamari, and I remember this, with a Luke Olive aioli. And Luke Olives, you can't buy them without the pits. Huh. So you'd have to, like, smash all these olives first, get the pits out, and then we made, you know, an aioli from scratch. And so it was a total creative process where he hired a bunch of cooks that were probably, like, sous chef caliber people. Mm-hmm. That's still probably my gift, unfortunately. I used to lie so bad in resumes because I was hungry. I wanted that
you
next
want the
step,
gig, yeah.
But I didn't have the resume to back it up, so I would like my job at Redstone. They're like, you ever worked a wood fire grill? I'm like, oh yeah, 100 times. Never see one in my life. Yeah. I didn't even know how to start the fire. So anyways, we got into this place, and it was the first time I saw a culinary creative culture like that. He would ask us questions like as a group, like, what's your favorite food? No one asked me that before. And then you'd say something arbitrary like asparagus. And he'd be like, why? You're like, I don't know. It tastes good. He's like, I like pizza because it's a canvas. Mm. Or I like pasta because it's a canvas. Or I like this because of the time or the connection. And he really made me think about food in a different way. And it was a friendly. Know who I worked with there was Mecca.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, me and her line cooks together.
Oh, funny.
Ask her about the ketchup and mustard shower on her last day of work. Shout out Mecca. And that was the environment we were working in.
Mecca is a food writer, an activist now, like very... Like
a really good cook, too.
Really good cook.
Yep. Yeah. And so that was kind of the atmosphere that we had there, and it was amazing. There were so many talented people there that probably went off to do their own thing. Mm. And that's when I took it really serious. But unfortunately, I was still... in a time of my life where I was probably hitting the bottle a little bit too hard and couldn't, I don't know, grab a hold as tight as I wanted to, but I'll never forget it. And that kind of changed everything from there on out, where like being really good at your craft was the flex.
Huh.
You know, like my knife skills got great. I understood Japanese knives. I understood different cuts. I got creative with implementing, you know, like Asian French fusion was coming around. That was like a huge thing, which would I would segue into. You know, I got to work with Stuart Woodman a few times.
Yeah.
Which was funny because you'd think me and him in a room wouldn't.
Stuart Woodman is one of the strongest personalities, I think, in Chefzilla, in the last 20, 30 years in the Twin Cities.
Yeah.
I loved Stuart, but I always say that I like I like assholes. Like, I'm drawn to the real strong personality where, like, that's Stuart, right? Now, I never had to work for him. I always say that about people. It's like, well, I talk to people. I never had to work for
him. Yeah, I didn't. You know, I heard a couple things about him. I didn't know him super well or hear about him a lot. And I remember, like, we were opening up this place called The Workshop.
Mm.
Actually, the first time I met you was there.
Yeah.
You came in because you used to come in with your camera and you would, because I'm like, first time I saw a camera and you got your mic and I didn't know what to do. I remember freezing up. But, and we were producing amazing food and we were doing like our opening night and he's very aggressive and when it's busy and when you're cooking and he'll call you out. And like, but that didn't shake me because I'm used to that. Like, I grew up in an environment where, like, people would choke me out until I was unconscious and, like, very hostile. Like, that's not embellishing at all, right? So when someone's snapping on me, I'm like, bring it on. What you got? I'm like, don't talk to me that way. You'll get more out of me if you don't. And that, like, pissed him off. And I could tell he was so pissed. And he didn't talk to me for the rest of the night. And I was like, okay. And we got through the night and we sat down. I was like, hey, man, you're the man. I want to be your number two. You'll get so much out of me if you don't talk to me that way. And I don't know if he respected it or whatever, because I don't know if anyone's really pushed back on him because he was such an intimidating guy.
Right.
But in the moment, I'm like, hey, man, I'm used to being in the pot of boiling water. Let's rock and roll.
Yeah.
That was really cool, though. That guy could cook. Holy smokes, the talent.
Yes.
I think I could cook for another 10 years at a high level, and I don't know if I'd understand food like he does. It was effortless for him, you know, like Michael Jordan. You can't teach.
What's that like for you when you're learning and growing, and you see someone with that level of kind of mastery?
Well, I'm competitive, and I'm like, I want to be that guy, and so I wanted to. You know, he'd give me a lot of creative freedom, as you know. So we did the workshop, and then we took over this restaurant in a hotel in Bloomington, Layla.
Layla, I remember that.
Yeah, so I was part of the takeover there, right? And so, like, that pushes you, you know, being around people that talented. Or it could break you. You know, it's one of those things. But my whole life, life's been trying to break me my whole life. So, like, being in those moments, high-pressure situations are, like, comfortable for me.
Yeah.
I used to like pain because it was something I was familiar with. Maybe other people didn't like it. I didn't want to let go of the pain as I grow up. You know, when I got sober, I started realizing I had all this pain. So, like, messing with people like him, it didn't bother me. I was like, let's go. You know, I know this.
Yeah.
A more sophisticated way of communication might have been intimidating for me because I didn't know that.
Right. You right. Know? How interesting when you say that, like, pain is something you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
pain can be comfortable because you know it.
Yeah. Yeah. So working really hard and failing and... That's probably nothing. Like
I don't even feel it or notice it.
Yeah. Yeah, because that, for most people, that sort of uncomfortableness, that kind of pain is difficult to work through. But considering, like, the literal pain that you've gone through.
My whole life has been a failure, you know, in the grand scheme of things. Maybe not the last few years, but for a long...
How do you mean?
For 35 years, I failed, you know, like I didn't meet any standard, I thought, that even a basic human being, you know, I wasn't, you know, I was a hustler, I was scrappy, it was always fight or flight, I wasn't considerate, I didn't think of people, I was selfish, I was full of drugs and alcohol, you know, I got lucky because I got sober right around when my kids were born, but in the beginning, I probably wasn't the best father, partner, you know, I'm divorced, you know, I watched my wife and kids walk away from me because I was too much, you know, that's the total failure right there. Yeah. You know, at the highest level, your own kids, you know, that you failed.
Is it hard for you to admit that, to say it? You say it with such...
No. But, I failed in school. I failed in love. I failed in life. I failed in my career.
Hmm.
And it's a trip because, like, life is all hindsight, too. You sometimes you're so convicted that you're making the right decision, and you don't know until you make it, and you look back. And I just never had a role model. I never had anybody do anything in front of me where I could learn to really make some maybe fundamental, basic judgments and make better decisions. But, yeah. I mean,
it is interesting. We do keep score after you play the game, right? Like, it's just sort of how it is.
In life, it's probably the only game you keep score your whole entire life.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I always felt like a failure. And I didn't understand this drive in me that made me be an entrepreneur, that made it – it was impossible for me to work for other people. I hated it. I bounced around more than anybody else. You know, it got hard for me to get a job because I would go from restaurant to restaurant to restaurant. But I think there was something fueling me where I was like, this isn't enough, or I disagree, or I want to feel the pressure. I want the responsibility. And, you know, you can't get that until you do your own thing. So in 2020, I sold my house and I quit my job, and I had 6 months of money to live on. Probably the worst year to open a restaurant. And I did Joey Meatballs. But again, like, everyone's like, oh, my God, what are you doing? I'm like, right. I don't know, man. Why, so this is part of the story.
Was there something in you where you're like, I have to do it?
I think it's been in me my whole life.
Yeah. But why at that point? What?
I don't know. I had a great job. I was the chef at McAllister College, making six figures.
Right.
Working a 9-to-5. It was not a bad job. I actually enjoyed it. You know, it was awesome. It was a great company to work for. And I really like working with kids. And I really like giving back to people. And, like, that was a total great job. I needed more. There was something unfulfilling. It wasn't enough. You know, I was doing pop-ups and closed restaurants with ex-cons. I don't know if you remember.
I do remember that. Yeah.
And, you know, that's pretty hardcore stuff to be pulling off in 2020. And I had a full-time job. And pop-ups are hard. And, you know, but it seemed the right direction. I was ready. It was like I put together a plan when I worked at Julia.
Yeah.
Where I was like, I want to do this on my own.
And that was the Julia is an Italian restaurant in a hotel in downtown Minneapolis.
I got to collab with Stephen Brown.
One of the best chefs in town.
Yeah.
In the state. In the Midwest.
Yeah. Wow, what a great, I consider him like a really good friend. And that was a mentor, you know?
Was that where you, I mean, because there you were doing homemade pasta, you were doing pizzas,
crazy pasta.
But like this was, you know, I've sort of wondered, like, what is the through line that sort of said to you, like, I'm going to, you know, that led you to pizza? And that Julia experience was certainly all about, it was quite a bit about dough.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we were doing some pretty crazy pizzas there. I mean, I've always loved pizza. Remember Bulimbi Bay?
Oh, yeah.
I was a sous chef there a long time ago.
Okay.
And we were making pizzas. Just about every job I've ever had, there was always pizza, and that was always the thing I leaned into. And every restaurant I've worked in, if they didn't have pizza or a pizza oven, I was throwing a brick in a convection oven. I'm like, well, we're going to do a flatbread or something close to it.
Right.
You know, I kind of skipped over a lot, but I was in South Florida for 8 years. And if you guys don't know about South Florida, it's like where the New Yorkers go during the winter.
Right.
And they bring the culture and the food with them. So if you didn't know how to make pasta or pizza, like, good luck. It's either sushi or pasta or pizza. That's like what they eat down there.
Right.
And it became really competitive. They were bringing in famous Italian chefs from Italy. And, you know, I tell people I really learned my craft in South Florida. That's where I ran into New Haven style pizza.
The first time you had it was in
South Florida. Yeah.
Let's stop right there. We'll break. When we come back with Joshua Hedquist from OG Zaza, we'll get into the pizza story. OG Zaza, how it started, how it's growing, and what the vision is going forward. Darusha Eats back in just a minute.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan. Or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
Hey, it's Jason DeRusha with a message from Minnesota's pig farmers. Discover the meat of the North, pork. Pork is as Minnesotan as the lakes, trees, and people who call this state home. Did you know there are more than 30,000 pig farming families? They live and work in the North Star State, raising one of the safest, most delicious meats the whole world can enjoy. Pork is something we enjoy in the DeRusha family at least a few times a week. Maybe it's pork loin roast, shoulder, pork chops, ribs, bacon. Oh, I'm getting hungry just talking about it. It's so affordable, too. If you're looking for recipes, MNPork.com's got them. Great recipes like dilled pork cutlets, Parmesan-crusted pork chops, and you can feel good about eating pork from Minnesota farmers. They've been reducing their carbon footprint with better genetics, new technologies, and more. Pick up pork tonight for dinner at your local meat market or grocery store. Let's have Minnesota pork for dinner. Oh, yeah.
DeRusha Eats continues. Here's your host, Jason DeRusha.
We continue our conversation with Chef Joshua Hedquist. He is the owner of OG Zaza, an entrepreneur who has shared his story as a felon as a child, an addict who is now sober.
10 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Was there a point where you said, you're like, what made you get sober? What made you stop?
I got divorced and I lost it all. And I was like, this is it, you know? I'm going to drown myself in a bottle of whiskey. I was working at some job as a chef, just feeling really sorry for myself. And I got really fucked up for like 2 days straight. And I woke up. I was like, I'm never drinking again. And I probably said that 100 times. And this time it stuck. Hmm. I don't understand it. That was it. That was the last.
That was it? Just cold?
Cold turkey.
Cold turkey.
No treatment, no nothing. Wild. I battled this for 20 years?
Huh. Is it a daily battle or
no.
You just get...
There was like a threshold almost.
Huh.
It's like, I don't want it. I don't sell alcohol in any of my restaurants. I've been offered spaces that have bars. I'm not super... Me personally, my opinion on it is a lot of people make a lot of terrible decisions when they do that stuff.
Right.
I see a lot of young men put themselves in positions that aren't great and... For me to be my best self as a father or a partner to somebody, being sober is the best decision. The juice ain't worth the squeeze, in my opinion. Now I know other people can, you know, I know you like
navigate
your,
it,
you like your vino and stuff like that.
Right.
But for me, I just feel like even if I can drink 100 times and not have a problem, that one time is too much of a liability in my life to want to do it. So it's like, whatever, you know.
Why would I do it?
Look where I'm at. I mean, you've seen me.
Yeah.
I've been in the Twin Cities forever. I did not start in a place like this.
Right.
And it's been an uphill battle. And now I feel like I can help out a lot of other people. And so I'm like, no way. No way would I risk that. It's just not worth it.
OG Zaza, how did that start?
It was kind of like I always wanted to open a pizza place. And I had Joey Meatballs and Salad Slayer. And you know.
Such great names. You are the branding. I know, like, you're not a branding expert or whatever, but like the names are so good.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate
Salad
that.
Slayer. Yeah, like, yeah, you know, these concepts, someday they may come back. They, you know, yeah, but like, yeah, pretty genius. Joey Meatballs, very, very good.
I love Joey Meatballs. Joey Meatballs is not gonna die ever, but you know, right now you gotta feed the. What do they call it? Feed the fat pig or something like that, right?
That's right.
Keep feeding the fat pig.
And the fat pig right now is
OG Zaza. Yeah, OG Zaza. So, you know, someone had an oven and they're like, what do we do with it? I got the space. You got Joey Meatballs. Like, you know, what can we do with this pizza oven? I was like, get out of my way. I knew what I was going to do. I knew how I wanted to do it. I knew the style I wanted to do. I knew how I liked eating pizza. And I also knew that it was kind of scarce out here in the Twin Cities.
New Haven was your choice.
Oh, 100%. I used to get Delano's Pizza when it was in Uptown. Mm-hmm. Well done. That's the way I ordered it every single time. I thought they'd put too much cheese and toppings on for my liking, but, you know, well done. Otherwise, it's kind of soupy. And if you think about New Haven style, it's kind of like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I wanted to do something fast and affordable because I had saw what changed in our industry drastically. People want food that's just as delicious as Julia at the Emory Hotel, but they don't want to pay $25 for a pizza. They want to be able to feed their kids, and they want to get in and out. So I was trying to do more than just make the best pizza I knew how to make. I wanted to feed the people, and I wanted it to be more of an everyday experience.
And you, this was post-COVID, right?
Yep. Yeah. I learned a lot. Holy smokes. I opened 8 restaurants during COVID.
Yeah.
In different little places, you know, like someone would be like, hey, I got 500 square feet. What can you do? I was like, give me 2 weeks, I'll open a restaurant. Right. I lost a lot. I won a lot. Learned a ton. I got like my MBA during COVID because.
What did you learn? What were the biggest?
Don't make decisions when you're excited.
Huh.
Yeah. This too shall.
I think we all can. You look back and you're like, oh, yeah.
What was I thinking, right? You know, keg and case, you know, I wanted to go there and like bring it back. It was like St. Paul. They have such a deeply rooted Italian culture over there. Like Joey Meatballs is going to like fit in perfect. You know, I lost about $200,000 in that deal and I'm not a rich guy. So that was a big L for us. But, I also learned that this too.
You're not the only one who lost that keg and case deal. Food hall in St. Paul that just was in sort of the wrong place and never quite worked.
Shout out to Craig Cohen. He's a beast. Love that guy to death. Got a bad rap on that deal.
Yeah.
That dude went out on his shield like a champion, and I'll stand up for him 100 times.
It was a big risk to give it a go, right? Like, it took courage to give it a go.
Yeah, and he didn't have the heart to charge people rent during those hard times, and, you know, you can only sustain for so long, right?
Right.
So that's why I love him to death. You know, he'd sacrifice himself for people underneath him. What a great way to go out.
So you're opening stuff, trying stuff. Some work, some doesn't.
Yep.
But the people really were drawn to OG.
Mm-hmm.
And describe what New Haven style is. What does that mean to you?
There's a couple, like, rules, right? You can't sell by the slice. It's got to be thin and well done.
And well done means like?
Charred.
Charred.
Some people call it burnt in Minnesota. We call it charred here.
It's the undercarriage is charred.
The undercarriage is charred, but it's more the crust that has
it's
a
the
char.
Crust, yeah.
And if you look at our pizzas, a little bit of tomato sauce might get up on the crust a little bit and char up. Kind of like when you're making a demi.
Yep.
You would bake the tomato paste on the bones to give you this umami bomb. Hmm. And so, you know, we bring our pizzas to the edge. Sometimes they might be a little overdone, and I'll be the first to admit that, but we are going for a specific thing. So it's kind of like if I eat fries that are a little too salty, I'm like, at least they try to season them, you know? And
when you're taking it to the edge, so what's the temperature in the oven?
So the deck is probably 650 to 700, and then the dome, which is, you know, above, is probably anywhere from 800 to 900. It's not as hot as a Neapolitan style oven because it's got to cook longer. Neapolitan's like 90 seconds.
90, yeah.
We're like 4 or 5 minutes in the oven.
Okay.
We do 12-inch pizzas.
But you're probably like a couple seconds, like getting it right at that
Yes.
Perfect spot.
Yep.
What's the window? It's got to be like a 5-second window of when it's exactly
5
right.
to 15 seconds, depending on where that oven's at and how many pizzas you got in there. And it sucks because, like, I never get upset when I see a review of a picture of a pizza where, like, it's burnt.
Yeah.
I get upset when I see a picture of a pizza and it's golden brown, looks like Domino's. I take a picture that I send it to my chefs or my managers and, like, more color. And everyone right. teases me. So when I walk into OG Zaza, like more color.
But that's the flavor that you want. Otherwise, like, how many pizza places are there in Minnesota? So many.
Yeah.
That color,
mm-hmm.
I mean, your dough, mm-hmm. I think, is exceptional.
It makes all the difference. But I mean,
but that color is really what the difference is.
We got that 120-hour fermented dough, and then we got that huge char on there, and that's just a different experience. And I get a lot of people are like, it looks burnt. I'm like, just try it. And they try it, and they're like, I get it.
Yeah.
And we have a huge following. You know, we opened up a pizza place in Rosedale Center.
Was that the first one?
I had something at Ty's.
Oh,
remember that?
I do remember.
I had
that.
A Joey Meatballs and a OG Zaza in there. Didn't last very long, you know.
But that was the first.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was really tough. You know, that was right after the second wave, and we really tried hard. Yeah. But it, you know, downtown, you know, that's a whole. I could get in a podcast about downtown Minneapolis in itself, right?
Right.
So it was just a struggle. We did our best. We took that and we just ran it over to Rosedale Center, and that's like where OG Zaza really came alive. And somebody took a picture of our little Roni, and I ran out of dough for 3 months after that. And we were the most talked about pizza place in Minnesota. Let me tell you something real quick. I've never felt like I was one of the cool guys. I never felt like I was part of the restaurant that was the hottest thing. I always watched everyone as in the audience, you know? And like for once, it seemed like I was a part of something that was hot.
Huh.
And I even had a little bit to do with it, you know? Like it was my pizza. It was the best fucking feeling I've had in 40 years that someone was like, something that you made, I got to tell everybody about. Man, that was such a great feeling. And
higher high than anything you'd experience?
Except for having kids, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so, I mean, you want to talk about grind. I've been grinding for 25 years, Jason. You know, like I've made the mistakes. I've had to reinvent myself. I've lost it all multiple times in my life. And to fight back up and not give up and keep going and not having any cheerleaders. You know, I didn't have cheerleaders. I don't want them, but I never had them. Maybe it's nice to have them. I don't know what it's like.
It's true.
So it was a great feeling. And then we ran out of dough every day for 3 months, and people really liked us to a point where, like, we became a meme. You know, have you heard of this place called OG Zaza? In the pizza world, anyway.
Yeah.
You know, the Twin City Pie Chaser pages, you know, they were getting sick of seeing pictures of my pizza. But, you know, now that was like a couple years ago. And in the last year now, we got two more locations and two pizza trailers.
How much has social media been a part of this sort of rise, you think?
Oh, almost all of it.
Hmm.
So imagine 20 years ago, you see you have the best pizza you ever had in your life. How do you communicate that to 20,000 people in 5 minutes? That was TC Pie Chasers, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was...
Yeah.
Boom.
It's a Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
It's...
It's specific for the Twin Cities.
And there's just focused on pizza. And I love it because you see places that, like, you would never know before. But, like, it's just regular people who love pizza.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, here's a food critic saying what's good.
Yeah.
It's regular people, and then enough people go, and you sort of get the vibe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you guys, I mean, you know, I've known you for a long time, but when I saw OG Zaza get going on that group, like,
it's
people,
crazy.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
Now, there are haters, too.
Oh, I love it. I'm used to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've challenged a couple of them. Never works out. I'm not trying to beat anybody up, but, you know, definitely a troll on a troll is my new hobby.
Well, and I did post in this group on, like, what do you guys want to know from about Joshua? And the administrator, Dan, says, how much credit does Dan get in building your success?
That's awesome.
How fun is it? You know, pizza is one of those things that I think gives joy. right? Like, you've cooked everything. You've been all different types of cuisine. What's the moment like when you see someone take that first bite out of a slice of OG
Zeza? It's even before that. It's when they open the box and they saw something they've never seen before. You know, our little pepperonis that are cupped, the char. We put a lot of seasoning on our pizza. You know, I still take a chef-y approach. I don't give you those packets of three-year-old crappy Parmesan cheese, and they look at it, and they're like, whoa, and they bite into it, and they do the head nod. Like, that's great. You know, I bumped into Gavin at, like, Lifetime Fitness. I remember telling him about how much fun it is to cook pizza because it's such immediate gratification. You know, I'm a dopamine fiend, and immediate gratification is like my drug. And so you start off with a raw dough that you can't eat. I wouldn't eat. And then within 5 minutes, it's like one of the best things you ever had in your life. Like, that's crazy to me. What else can you do that with?
And nothing. And your dough, the ingredients are?
Flour, water, yeast.
Just doesn't get simpler.
Unbromated, unbleached flour. When you bleach things, it kills things. So, you know, that's a big proponent. And then we ferment it at a high temp and a low temp for 120 hours. It's a labor of love.
It's a long, I mean, that process.
I don't know if anyone else does it like that.
And why did you land on that technique?
Because I'm a hyperbolic person, so everything is like extreme. I don't know how to like be in the middle. So it's like, why don't we just ferment it until it's almost dead? Because, I mean, you can only ferment things for so long, and eventually it's overproofed, and the yeast is dead, and it's ate itself alive. And I wanted to keep pushing the envelope to see how hard can we push that. And then not just to do it for like, you know, your own.
Great, you did it.
Yeah. But to see if I could make
this is
it
not
better.
A masturbatory exercise.
I wanted to use a different word, but I'm going back on that. But yes, exactly. Culinary.
Right.
Yeah. But so, but does it make the experience better for the customer? And it did. So the complexity within the flavor and the texture, I think, continued to improve the longer that we did that.
I think it's more a texture thing myself, like when I experience it. You do get, like, I think your crust, like, I would eat it with nothing on it.
Yes.
Because it's delicious. And you get, like, a little bit of that yeasty note, but
it's not
more
overpowering.
No, it's not like a sourdough type expression, but it is a textural
chewy
achievement.
It's got body to it. You feel it in your jaw like a perfectly cooked baguette.
Yes.
And then there's brittle crispiness on the outside, so it's kind of got all the components of the texture spectrum in one bite, and I love that.
Me too.
You know, that's
it's
fun.
Why people love a baguette, I think, right? Like, it's a similar thing, but I think don't think like baguette, but like really thin crust.
Yeah, like a baguette has so many different textures to it.
Yeah, which is the part of the fun of it, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
What's the vision? I mean, now you've got a couple locations, a couple trailers. What do you see for OG Zeza?
To continue to try and grow the company and like do really cool shit while we do that. I'm really into community outreach. You know, I work with, you know, multiple local nonprofits. I sit on the board of some nonprofits.
You're on the Redemption Project, right?
The Redemption Project.
Which is fitting, considering your own story.
Yeah, I was kind of the poster child. You know, I was going into prisons and talking to some of these guys to let them know, like, hey, if I can do it, you can do it. Because there's nothing special about me. Because all these guys you see in the prison system have grit. You know, they just didn't have belief. Maybe they didn't think they could get out and figure it out.
We love, as a society, to punish. We love to throw people in jail and in prison.
Yeah.
We love it.
Yeah.
And we suck at figuring out, like, what is the next step.
What's the next step after they're in trouble? Yeah.
We're awful.
Yeah.
And no one really wants, people don't want to deal with it.
No. They say they do, but I don't know if they do, because when you deal with it,
I don't see the evidence.
You're not petting bunnies and catching butterflies. Like, there's a you know, a really ugly side to getting in trouble, and I've experienced it firsthand. You know, I've mentored, you know, men out of prison systems, and as good as it feels, it doesn't always end up as, you know, you think it would. It's not a happy
It's not
end.
Always going to work.
Yeah.
It's frankly, it's probably mostly not going to work.
I do keynote speaking for people like Fortune 500 companies that want to start working with the hard to hires, and I warn them. I say, go into this knowing that your success rate might be 50%.
Yeah, and that'd be pretty good.
Yeah,
it's hard.
Yeah,
there's a reason people end up in that world.
Well, and then it's really hard to get out.
Here's
a real quick stat for you. When you're in prison, you make 3,600 decisions a day. When you're free, you make 37,000. And how do you bridge that gap for somebody? Man, they got to be a really amazing person to handle that on their own, right?
Yeah.
So you got no money, no job, nowhere to live, and most people don't want to deal with you.
Hard to rent an apartment because you got a conviction on your
record.
Hard
to get a real job.
Hard to get a job.
And so that's why we're a felony-friendly work environment. If you want to see systemic change, you got to be a part of it. You know, I'll give you an example. If Uncle Rico gets out of prison and he's sleeping on grandma's couch working at Wendy's, and the youngsters in his community see that, they're like, well, what's the point? Why am I going to try? Because that's what I'm going to end up like. Well, what happens if he works at OG Zaza and buys a franchise, and now he's a pillar in his community that's going to help out people that look just like him?
Yeah.
And so for me, like, that's kind of what I stand on. With my partner on the trailer, Mike Brendale, we just started a new nonprofit called Feeding St. Paul. Mm. It's a legit 501(c). And, you know, we're feeding homeless people. We do blanket drives. We do pillow drives. We work with them. You know, it would be great to rehabilitate anybody that wants to get a chance. You know, we'll give them a shot. Last Christmas, we pulled up our trailer to encampments because during Christmas, a lot of these federal or state-run outreach programs are not open on these bigger holidays.
Right.
So, you know, we pulled up and we made probably like 300 or 400 pizzas for people in encampments, and that's, you know, what Feeding St. Paul is all about.
Do you still feel like a failure, or do you feel like you've succeeded?
You're going to try and make me cry here. It happens every time. I still think I feel like a failure. I think it's probably part of my character or personality in a way, you know. When it's been a part of my life for so long, I think it's always going to feel like that. But the beauty in that is that I attack life harder than anyone I know. I stay up later than everyone, and I wake up earlier than everyone. And I never feel satisfied or like that I've arrived or been, or I'm here, or I'm good, I've healed myself, whatever it is. I don't have that feeling, and it's going to keep me moving forward at a fast rate. And hopefully I can get to a place where I get to help out a ton of people. If you die a billionaire, I don't think you win, but if you can change 100 lives, you know, and that's the way I'm trying to approach my life.
It's cool. That's cool. Are any of us... We all are failures. It's just a matter of if you want to admit it, mm-hmm. and do you want to grow from it? Do you want to chase success? And then what is success? I don't know. Like, some of these things, it's heavy stuff.
My success is that my kids love me and I love them, and I have a healthy relationship with them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Didn't have to. It wasn't headed in that direction, right?
It wasn't.
But you changed it. You changed course.
Yeah. Maybe I did, or maybe somebody did. I don't know. I'm not a religious man. But I'll tell you what, the path that I've lived and where I'm at right now, sometimes I feel like someone chooses people to go through that hard stuff because they know what's going to happen on the other side.
I like it. All right, before we go, a couple rapid fire pizza related questions.
Yeah.
Besides New Haven, what is your favorite style of pizza? I've stumped you. Of all the questions, this is the tough one, right?
Yeah, I mean, I really like, Neapolitan. I mean, that was my favorite for so long so I'd probably say Neapolitan.
I do love Neapolitan.
Yeah.
What is deep dish Chicago style pizza?
I don't think it's pizza.
Is it pizza or is it a casserole?
I think it's a pie.
It's a pie. Do you like it or not?
I don't remember the last time I had deep dish. I don't know.
Do you have a favorite? Do you have other pizza places you like in town?
Yeah.
You've tried a bunch of places. I know you were doing a video series for a while, which is kind of fun.
I got fat. I had to quit doing it. I'm not going to lie. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, this is the challenge of my job.
Yes.
It's hard to stay.
I look at those videos. I was 20 pounds heavier.
You were. It's true.
I really liked Red Rocket. They had a solid pizza, which is, you know, Neapolitan style. Yep. And they got a little trailer or whatever. I think right now it's probably one of the better. And then I had one, I think it was like Bear Paw.
Other than pizza, what's your favorite thing to eat?
Steak.
And do you think Dave Portnoy in the One Bite, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a good thing, and I can't wait for him to come to Minnesota and I get to do something with him, I want to challenge him to like a 40-yard dash and maybe an arm wrestle. Because I feel like he's one of those guys that would do it.
Yes.
And I kind of like him.
I saw he just visited Beluto in Miami.
That burns me up.
In Miami.
Oh!
I know.
They're so lucky. I mean,
they are lucky. And I do think, like, I know, like, people have opinions on Portnoy, but my opinion is, next to Guy Fieri.
They have opinions on him?
I don't know if anyone's done more for kind of individual local restaurants in the country. And Guy Fieri, I think, has been, he to me is the king. No one has done more than him. And I think Portnoy, honestly, like, look at how much business he's driven.
I think Portnoy's probably done more restaurants.
Recently, yeah. You're probably right.
Yeah.
You may be right. Maybe Portnoy over Guy, but like those two, I think.
The 1-2 punch, yeah.
They have a lot of my respect.
Mm-hmm.
Which maybe would surprise people, but those two have a ton.
Guy, he's the man.
He is the man.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Over the last 8 years, I've gotten to know him pretty well.
Joshua, this was awesome. Thank you so much. I think you're a success.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it.
And I followed you all the way.
Yeah.
And it's just fun to see. It's fun to see the success right now.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to the DeRussia Eats podcast on WCCO Radio, 830 AM. We do conversations with chefs, with farmers, with small business people every Tuesday and Thursday at 4 p.m. The podcast is available every week. If you enjoyed what you heard, I would love for you to leave us a review. Give us however many stars you can. I don't know, 10, 20 stars would be nice, 5 stars. And leave your feedback as well. It really helps us grow and helps support covering the food community here at WCCO Radio and in the DeRussia Eats podcast. If you'd like to email me with an idea or a question about the restaurant scene, you can email Jason at Odyssey, AudacyAudacy.com. Jason at Odyssey.com. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time on the DeRussia Eats podcast.
Thanks for listening to DeRussia Eats. Dan Cook is our producer. Jason DeRussia is your host. Please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave us a review. DeRussia Eats is a production of Odyssey.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast.
Reality Gaze, let's love.